let's talk about that map then.
Okay.
If that's okay. You can go ahead and bring it up. Now, I'm assuming you said earlier that this was, you opened up the map, and this, I'm assuming that this is what that is.
Yes.
Before it was an internal map only?
No, we cut it loose during the Haman fire in 2002. So when we cut this loose, people didn't like the fact that it wasn't password protected. And
why?
Because a wildfire is going to be a landscape scale event. So what you do on your property is going to impact your neighbors. And so we tell folks, I want you to spy on your neighbors, because if you're green and your neighbor's red, if your house is, if you've done everything on your property, but your neighbor hasn't done anything, that's going to impact your home and your safety. So we want to deal with this on a neighborhood scale. The other question we got all the time was, I don't want you to release this because I don't want insurance companies to know what my rating is. So we've worked with a lot of insurance companies, USAA, Allstate, State Farm, to ask them if they use our rating. They hire their own assessors, and they told us, you're not telling us anything we don't know. We know what kind of roof they have. We know what kind of vegetation they have on their property. So their rates are driven by claims, not by our risk map.
So I look at, okay, let me explain to you what I saw. When I first looked at this map, I see a big map of the city.
Right.
With a lot of red.
Right. That's the shape of the wildland-urban interface. It doesn't mean that whole area is extreme, but that's the risk area. Basically, our wildland-urban interface extends from the Air Force Academy down to NORAD. Most of it's west of I-25. We have some eastern areas around UCCS, Palmer Park, and Arundel.
You know, and that's one of the things that's interesting to me, because one thing that I did hear was I-25 is sort of that barrier. Is that a myth?
It is. One of the lessons from the tunnel fire in the Oakland Hills, 92, was that it crossed an A-lane freeway. So, again, we tell folks, when you have spotting and branding anywhere between a quarter and 2 miles, you know, that highway's not going to stop it. It's certainly a place where we can make a defense, but that alone is not a fire break.
Okay, so we're looking at this map, and we're looking at the shape. And describe, you know, this is the city limits. Mm-hmm. Describe what we're looking at here.
We have originally defined the what's called the hillside. So those areas, again, where it's defined by steep slopes, topography, and natural fuels defines the hillside. We went through and carefully shaped that, went street by street, and looked at those characteristics. Originally, Kmart on Nevada Avenue was part of the wildland-urban interface, and that didn't make any sense. So we have gone through and changed that shape a couple times over the years. We're still discovering areas that, you know, hidden neighborhoods like Hartsock near Palmer Park, that a lot of people don't even know exist, that certainly have wildland characteristics. So that's how we define that shape.
And you look at specifically the topography and the fuels, the surrounding fuels. At what point do you say, okay, this is interface, or this is wildland and urban interface, and this is not?
Yeah. Basically, the natural fuels. If it's completely landscaped and it's flat, then it doesn't have what we consider wildland characteristics.
So first you look at this map and you look at the macro view, mm-hmm. and you see this big red splotch, this big red, you know, almost like a C. Okay. So now we zoom in, and is it zoomable by zip code? Is it zoomable by, or do you just have to use the little magnifying thing?
You can zoom in by street, or you can enter your address, mm-hmm. and it'll go straight to your lot. And then once your risk assessment map comes up, it will also give you what's driving that risk rating. So you can look at your roof, you can look at your veg density, you can look at your siding, and that'll help you in addressing what you need to do about it.
And is this, do you go around house by house? And
yeah.
Wow.
Back in 2000, Captain Mills sent out fire engines, and they did windshield visits. A lot of the data is GIS derived. We're lucky that we're so data rich in the city, but there's certain features like roof and decks that we had to collect on windshield visits. So we collected those 36,000 addresses. And because the risk assessment was 10 years old, we hired a fuels technician. She recently reassessed all 36,485 houses.
And you say recently as in?
Right before Waldo.
Wow. So how... And that's the first time since 2000 that the reassessment was done?
As people did work, they would call us and say, I've done mitigation. Can you come out and reassess my house? So we would update it. We don't fly over the city once a month and update it that way. But as people make changes, we ask them to contact us. We'll come out, do a reassessment, and see if that changes your risk rating.
Do you have plans to do a general sort of reassessment every 5 years, every 10 years? Or?
It depends on the event and the fuel conditions. So probably right now we're on a 10-year cycle. If we have another large event or if we have a severe drought, that may change things that may speed up the assessment time frame.
Now, I see you've sort of overlaid satellite imagery mm-hmm. with this.
Yep.
So your standard view is going to be just the color-coded blocks.
Correct.
So explain to me, as we zoom in, a color-coded block, what that means.
We have five ratings, and it ranges from low to extreme. So low is dark green, moderate is light green, high is yellow, very high is orange, and extreme is red. And we don't have a color for no risk, because if you live in the WUI, you have a risk. And just because you're green doesn't mean that you don't have anything to do. There's still some steps that you can take to make it safer.
Well, looking just right there at that, we've got, okay, so we have yellow high risk right next to a green of moderate risk, and
right.
then you have right next to that very high risk.
Yeah.
How can that green be in the middle of the two high risk
Very, very good question. Is that that's what's unique about our risk assessment is that it's down to the lot level. So just looking at that parcel, again, we assess the veg density, the defensible space, and the structural characteristics, and that's what drives your rating. So if you're green, but you're next to a house that's rated at very high, maybe you should have that neighbor over for a cup of coffee. That's all we're saying.
Could it be as simple as, a dry lot with a asphalt roof versus something that has trees and a shake roof?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry?
One house, in this instance where we have a house that's rated at moderate next to a house that's rated at very high, the very high house has a shake shingle roof. And doesn't have defensible space next to a house that has a Class A roof with defensible space.
So that just shows the impact that your neighbor can have.
Absolutely.
Now, obviously, somebody's not going to, you mentioned you should have your neighbor over for a cup of coffee, but that person's not going to replace their roof just because you say, hey, your risk is really high. What can you kind of encourage them to do?
Yeah. I had a lady come up to me in a neighborhood meeting one time. She goes, honey, I'm 82 years old. That roof's going to outlast me. I get it. It's a big expense. But when it comes time to make those home improvements, not just thinking about what color to get, but think about the wildfire risk and the choices that you can make to make it safer. So in that hailstorm or when it comes time to replace that roof, be thinking about the fire characteristics.
Mm-hmm. I see all that gray around.
Mm-hmm.
Is that technically not part of the WUI?
Correct. Those don't have a risk rating. They weren't identified in the shape. Also, you have to have a structure on the property to be assessed. So if it's a large park area that doesn't have a house on it or a structure, then it won't get rated.
So. Okay. So that brings up an interesting question. What effect do parks and open space have in the WUI in terms of mm-hmm. risk?
It certainly impacts in relation to adjacency of these neighborhoods. We've identified risks in these neighborhoods, but part of what drives that is the adjacency of those common areas and open spaces. So in addition to the work that we do in residential areas, we also address common areas as well.
So would it be advantageous to live next to, in terms of wildfire risk, to live next to a park or open space?
It depends on the amount of fuels that are there. So if it's open, that may allow access if firefighters need to fight the fire. But it could also pose more of a risk if you have heavier fuel loading right up against those neighborhoods.
How does, you know, we saw obviously the fire broke into the northern part of the WUI. How does the northern part differ, or does it differ in terms of risk with this map than the southern part?
I don't think it does differ. Each neighborhood's a little different in terms of housing density and the type of topography in those areas. We do see a heavier fuel loading and more mixed conifer down on the southwest end of town. Think about those areas around the zoo where you have a lot bigger trees, a lot heavier fuel loading, so certainly a greater risk.
Mm-hmm. You were just at that point, I think it was that point where it was across I-25. And okay, so why not that middle portion between I-25 and Nevada? Why is that not colored in?
We do have some county enclaves that are not part of the city. They're inside city limits, but they're county lands. So those wouldn't be rated. And then there's some areas where it's flat and it doesn't have those wildland characteristics. So that's what we meant when we determined the shape. We literally went street by street. So some areas were included, some were excluded.
And if it's commercial, these ratings are just for residential.
Yeah. Correct. These areas are just for residences.
It just strikes me as interesting to look at that and see how that specific part is, what is there? I mean, obviously the creek, but.
That's that new Costco and Lowe's.
Costco development.
Yep.
Here.
Okay.
So that's parking lot and box stores right there.
Commercial office buildings on this side.
Mm-hmm. Now does that change risk in the area to have those types of developments?
Certainly people are there, employees and customers, but people don't live there. They tend to be more hardened, and they're parking lots around there. So
in some ways, it's kind of a good thing.
That it's built out, absolutely.
With these, you were talking about the portions of land that are actually county-owned. Mm-hmm. Do you work with the county in terms of what gets done there?
Absolutely. We have a very good working relationship with El Paso County. We've done mitigation work in Bear Creek Park, over 80 acres in that park alone, because it impacts top of Skyway and those neighbors around there. So, yes, we have done a lot of work with them.
So let's look at the zoo area. Okay. To me, that seems like a very high-risk area. And just the vegetation that's there versus what you see residentially up north, it seems more at risk for fire. I mean, would that be a true thought?
One general rule we give folks is people ask, what is the fire going to do? What's the fire behavior going to be like? And that'll all be driven the day, depending on the weather. But the general rule is 1.5 to 3 times the height of the fuels. So if you have 100-foot trees, you can expect 300-foot flame lengths. And that's crazy. But down there, we have a lot of Doug fir and a lot of large trees that we certainly have that type of fuel loading. And in some areas, we have overstocked stands of trees, anywhere between 150 and 300 trees per acre. So we know we have heavy fuel loading down there.
So this purple area here is the actual zoo.
Mm-hmm. And we've done mitigation work down around the old ski area. When you look on the hillside, we've treated about 100, almost 130 acres down there. We've treated over 30 acres at the zoo. So again, addressing those adjacencies, but our emphasis is going to gear more toward the residential areas now.
Mm-hmm.
So all that purple hatch mark, that's the work that we've done right above the zoo, just to the south of the zoo.
So for someone, for a resident, and you did mention a little bit about, you know, sort of spying on your neighbor, how do you encourage or what would you say to a resident to get to them to look at this map? And what would you say, mm-hmm. say to them to do with the map?
We teach folks, when we have the neighborhood meetings, we teach them about how to access this, how to use the map. And then we get into the specifics about what they can do on their property without clear cutting to mitigate their risk, the things that they need to look at. And it's funny when we walk around with homeowners, the things that we point out, they really don't have a concept. They don't look at it in terms of fire. You know, they'll have rattan furniture on the deck, or they'll have firewood stored right alongside the house. And those are things, you know, they think about convenience or aesthetics, but they're not thinking about fire. And just talking about that really gets them thinking about it.
Cedar Heights, you know, that was obviously the prime example that mitigation works.
Yes.
How much of that, the fact that neighborhood is still standing, how much of it is because of mitigation? How much of it is because of the way the fire moved?
I think a lot of it can be attributed to the mitigation work. And certainly we had a lot of crews up there. They were making a stand up there and going direct on that fire. But I talked to one of the battalion chiefs the morning after, because I went up there to see for myself what really worked and what, you know, what happened. And I talked to this gentleman, and he said that, he goes, Christina, it was like somebody flipped a switch. We had that flame front moving toward the community. We were ready to make a stand. They had punched in a dozer line. And all of a sudden, when it hit our mitigation project area, it laid down. And so they were able to go direct on it, and it kept it out of the housing area. And I think the firefighters saw for themselves how well that worked. And it improved safety for firefighters. That way they can go in there and make a direct attack. And so for me, I had to physically go up there and see what happened. Was there slurry drops? Did they cut dozer line? Did they burn out? And you could see where the fire, once it transitioned from the forest into that treated area, it had spotted in there, but there wasn't enough fuels to carry it. So I could see for myself that it actually did lay down in there. So mm-hmm. we know it works.